Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber podcast. My name is Tony Groves and today we're talking a little bit about mixing it up. As always, I'm joined by my co-host and this man is always mixed up, if I'm honest. Martin, how are you?
Not too bad, Tony. I'm looking forward to Christmas, actually.
Is it that time of year?
Yeah, I think I only realised that Advent started on Sunday and I was looking at everybody's trees up going, you bastards, why did you all put up your trees early? And then I realised it's not there early, just me late.
I actually got the book, you know the book, that did you see it? I'll post it now with this, the Taoiseach who stole Christmas, where they changed the Grinch for the Taoiseach. Anyway, listen, before a bit of housekeeping, remember these podcasts require support. We need you to go to patreon.com/tour. The Shack. The price of a cup of coffee keeps people like Martin in collars and cuffs and a hat for Christmas.
It gets me out of the boot of his car is what it does.
Much more importantly, we are actually delighted to be joined in the Tortoise Shack by recent graduate, very recent graduate in public policy. She just got her master's, folks. Sarah El Said.
Yeah, El Said.
And Sarah, the reason I had to say it twice because there's a different spelling to your name anyway. So I hesitated on the Sarah part as opposed to the end. Sarah, thanks for coming in to join us. I suppose. I'll just throw it straight out. You are from a mixed family.
Yes, I am. Yeah.
And in Ireland, currently, we have got a lot of noise about, and people say, are they integrating? What are people offering? Can you tell us a little bit about your own background and your situation?
Yeah. So my mother is Irish. She's a native of Ireland. And my father came here many years ago as an aviation engineer student. And he met mum and they fell in love and they had me. So I grew up I was born and raised in Ireland. And so I grew up in kind of a mixed culture. It's been an easy process. It was great growing up. It was great growing up. And I think just recently seeing and why we're having this conversation, the recent kind of noise, as you put it, has kind of brought it back to me in terms of we need to be having a discussion regards having mixed heritage, what it means to be Irish.
I've seen a lot of people say, well, you can't be Irish, you're X, or you can't be Irish, you're Y. And this narrative.
Well, I think we had this narrative, you know, I'm old enough to remember we had this narrative 30 years ago, Tony. And a mixed marriage back then was Protestant and Catholic.
Yeah.
You know, so we have to move on. We've moved on from that. I think largely moved on from that place. And I think we have to move on as well in every sense. I have family that are married to people from all over the world. So, you know, I don't really see it as mixed. I just see it as family, you know, kind of diverse.
Yeah, but that's grand for two white guys.
It's more difficult to be on the receiving. I mean, you're on the receiving end of it.
Yeah.
And it has ramped up in the last, what was it, 2-3 years? It has ramped up quite a lot.
Yeah, it's quite disappointing. So my father would be originally from North Africa. But dad has been here, more than he has spent time in his motherland. For myself, I grew up thinking dad was a tanned Irishman.
Yeah.
You know, he has the accent, he has the humor. I think when things for me, when I started to really notice, my identity, like as being mixed, was when 9/11 happened. Oh. And when 9/11 happened, I was in school and I remember the moment, the teacher running into the staff room and the door opening and I saw the Twin Towers and I was kind of confused what's going on. A week later, the narrative started to change of everyone being horrified to, you know, the Arabs, these, you know, and this kind of, you know, finding people who did this and kind of finding the source of blame and, you know, oh, Muslims and so on. And I was kind of like, well, wait a minute, you know, dad is, you know, Arab and, you know, dad comes from the Islamic faith, holds the Islamic faith. So I was very confused. And that's where I started to explore and try to understand my own background because I didn't see the prejudice and the misconceptions people had. I didn't grow up with that. So I didn't understand, like, my dad's not like that. What do you mean exactly? Mm. So growing up, it was difficult from that point on. So I would have been a teenager. And I remember, like, in our household, the dynamics are really different. I'm the eldest. Dad has me as the boss of the household, which, you know, typically people would have the misconception that my brother would be the boss of the household, but not in our household. Mm. And I think coming out into the real world, I found it difficult realizing, oh, women. Okay, women are second class citizens. And then, whoa, okay, my surname is another obstacle for me. But I'm Irish, you know.
I was going to ask you about your surname. You know, it's Elsaid.
Yeah.
Elsaid.
Actually, technically, which is kind of funny, technically it's said, like you said something. Mm. But when my dad was moving over, there was something that happened in terms of the translations, documents, and probably an Irishman probably changed his surname and added EL in front of it, and he got stuck with it and he didn't know how to change it. So, it actually is Sarah said.
And before 9/11, was that an issue, or is it just because, I mean, it's not a very, you know, yeah. And we'll say this, it's not a very Irish sounding name, but yeah. Then if you look at the Gaelic names, like mine is, yeah. If I was a woman and Irish would be Ní Mac Mahúna. Mm-hmm. So that's not all that different.
Yeah. As a child, I didn't really, I don't know, maybe I was cushioned. My family, like, I've never felt a difference. Mm. I felt a difference in terms of my skin tone because I was kind of, I had more sallow, like, I have sallow skin in comparison to other kids in the classroom, you know, mm. So I would get, you know, comments, you know, that were, you know, of just derogatory comments made to me. I would be confused, but then I would just kind of ignore it. And that's what kids do, you know. Yeah. But I think it's getting worse now.
Yeah, I think with kids too, it's difference. They see difference.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's how do you teach them to express that, you know, yeah. Seeing difference or accepting difference.
But in terms of children, to be honest, children are great in terms of, playing with one another, mm. You know, and not looking at differences as being an issue, and more like, you know, looking at mutual interest and what similarities do we have. Mm. It is what is ingrained. So it's coming from parents. Yeah. Parents call out and say, no, that kid is a traveler, or that kid is black, you know, or, you know, that kid is Arab or whatever. Mm. When that kid is just an Irish kid,
yeah.
Like their own kid.
And even if they're not an Irish kid and they're here a wet week, mm-hmm. You'd hope we would have the cop on to say that we welcome these people in, and that's. Yeah. But I'm fascinated by your you have that you mentioned identity,
yeah.
And how it was important when 9/11 happens and this stuff comes into your consciousness. Did you start to explore that other side of your cultural identity?
I did. In comparison to the, like, I'm the eldest of six. I'm the only one. I travelled out to Libya in 2012 and I lived out there for a year. Mm. And that's where I studied Arabic and I speak Arabic. And I think that's been great for my dad because none of us connected to his side, mm. to his culture, to, you know, everything. Like, he was just, everything was, you know, Christmas, Easter, and, yeah. You know, the whole lot, and going up to nannies, and, you know, it must be hard for him being here alone, not having his brothers with him and his sister and so on. So for me to learn the language, I think it's made a difference in his life. And I'm really happy that I've done that. And I would encourage my siblings to do that too, for his sake, because he's fantastic. He's done so much for us and sacrificed a lot. But in terms of getting to explore, yeah, I did. I explored, I learned more about my dad's faith. With the country that he comes from, and I connected to that world,
yeah.
To the best that I could. And a lot. And do you know, actually, the difference between speaking to my dad in English and speaking to him in Arabic? I really see himself come out in his own language, which is just absolutely beautiful.
He has his own colloquialisms.
Yeah, yeah, he does. He does. And like, and he's hilarious. Like, he's absolutely hilarious. Like, when he's speaking English, he's real Irish. Like, he's got the accent. Even like my husband Jay met him, and my husband's from the States, and he was like, oh my God, your dad's real Irish, you know? So, yeah.
Now that you can speak Arabic with your dad, does that help you to better understand his experiences coming here in comparison to your own experiences being here?
Yes, it does. It does. It helps me understand him because I empathize more for him.
Okay.
I have a lot more empathy for everything that he has, you know, he's sacrificed in terms of, like I said, his family, you know, being here. Like, I'm 32 in January, and my dad's been here over 32 years. He probably came in the early 1980s.
I'm kind of shocked to hear you're 32, to be honest.
Yay, it's the agua, it's the water.
But I suppose you raise a very interesting point, though, because your dad came here in the 80s. And we think of even now what we, you know, people say, oh, think of what was on the telly back then.
Yeah.
What was, you know, and they always say, what you can't see, what you can't see it, you can't be it, is the phrase we use now.
Yeah.
But it was always, well, if it was someone of sallow skin, of Indian or Arab or something, they must run a corner shop or, you know.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And these were the mildly racist tropes.
Yeah, yeah.
I can only imagine that was a different world.
Yeah. I suppose, being Irish, we're very good at pointing out when somebody is racist towards us, because I remember the 80s, and, you know, being a paddy in the 80s in England was not a happy time.
Exactly. And that's it's so ironic to hear politicians today make the statements that they do, because when the Irish went to the US, nobody wanted to know them. Nobody wanted them involved or didn't even want them to integrate into society. And then during the 80s, the English were terrified of us.
Oh, yeah,
you know?
Yeah. There's a funny story there. This, I can't remember which program it was on, but a mother was trying to explain to her children how history has changed. And she was going, you know, back in the 80s, the Irish were the terrorists.
Yeah.
And the child goes, Jedward? And it shows how perceptions over time can change.
Yeah, yeah.
But we're taking a step backwards.
We are taking a step backwards, and it's terrifying me because I think one of the aspects that really sparked me was the Maya O'Neill, the 16-year-old young girl that I passed away, or, you know, recently.
Yeah. She took her own life.
Exactly. And, really sad. And supposedly this is because of racist abuse towards her. Mm. And, you know, she's Irish, but she was, you know, ridiculed because she looked different. And, when I seen that, that triggered something in me, because it brought it back home. And I said, God, you know, is this where we're going? I thought we've moved on. Mm. And then also with the whole, like, the advertisement, the little advertisement, and the family, the Ryan family, you know, that also, that's family is my mom and dad, you know, that look there is what my mom and dad look like, you know, and the fact that mom and dad went through that years ago, and yet we're doing it again still. Like, why?
I think we've even done it worse.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's more insidious now than it was.
Yeah.
At least it was open and it was in your face in the past. Now it's more insidious. It's more ingrained.
Yeah.
How do we solve it?
How do we solve it? I think we need to start talking about it. I was saying to Tony earlier on that, you know, people were kind of, there was uproar regards the videos that were going around on Twitter and so on. I didn't like seeing those videos. It's upsetting. Yeah. But at the same time, I'm really happy that people are feeling really uncomfortable, you know, because if that is, you know, if you can't watch this and this is making you uncomfortable, you as a white person, you as someone that does not have to go through the racial abuse or the discrimination or prejudice or the comments that consistently come at you, like, where are you originally from? You know, if you don't have to go through that and this is making you uncomfortable, then good, because we need to start doing something about it.
Can you tell us a little bit about the videos?
Yeah. Well, the, oh, I don't want to.
Well, we don't need to name names, but we have to understand that these were videos, Martin, that were circulated where people then said, stop sharing. And I think there is a huge point where half of me, I know, said, well, I can see why people are uncomfortable. But as we did say before we came on air, is that it's good to be made uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Because if you're made uncomfortable, you may actually have to look internally a little bit. And maybe because I'm fed up of hearing, that's not us.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I remember a few years ago, mentioning about the whole, where are you originally from? And, you know, I'm fed up with this question because I've been getting this for years. Mm. And people say, really? Maybe they're just curious. You know, maybe they didn't mean anything about it and so on. And you're just kind of like, okay, they don't mean to be hurtful or so on, but it's microaggression. It's.
Well, I can only speak personally, and I think maybe 20 years ago, you could have said to somebody, where are you from? Yeah. Now you just shake hands because everybody's from somewhere else.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, even in Ireland, you're from somewhere else.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So I think that for me, that's changed. So over the years, there is, I always said, and hey, where are you from? You know, it's just a conversation opener.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think it's changed now over the years. I never say it anymore. I never say, where are you from?
Yeah. Cause I remember it was during work, actually, in another job that I was working, and I was at an event, and an older gentleman had said to me, he was talking to me, and he goes, so where are you from? And I said, oh, from just in Dublin, you know? And he goes, no, where are you originally from? And I said, Santry.
Yeah.
And he says, oh, you seem to have an answer for everything. And I said, well, you seem to have a question for everything.
Yeah.
You know, and he kind of like looked at me and I was like, I answered your question. And he was like, oh.
And again, you know, it's this, but that is in the culture where we do say in Ireland, we keep seeing it repeatedly saying, oh, that doesn't represent us yet. These people who we're talking about in terms of posting videos and stuff still achieved, you know, a decent number of votes were gotten. Like, it wasn't eliminated till around 4 or 5. I think I'm right in saying in one recent one. Hang on, Martin. I want to say, and yesterday there was a vote of confidence in the Dáil for the housing minister, and the party of government were happy to take the vote from Noel Grealish, who had stood up on the Dáil record and identified people purely on the basis of their
background,
their race and their nationality.
Yeah.
So we can't say it's not us. It's
Oh, well, I mean, you and I have said this for quite a while, that, you know, you don't see a separate kind of nationalist movement other than the lunatic fringe in Ireland, because it's encompassed within the two main parties. That's even
unfair to say it's just restrained to the two main parties.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. That's okay, unfair.
I get you.
It's
across the board.
There's a warm house for it in Ireland, unfortunately.
Yeah, there is.
And we do need to address
I think what's happening, and why is it increasing over the last few years, is because people think that this is the way to go. This populist, rhetoric will, you know, I'll score points. How dare you think that you're going to score points on people that you're hurting people? You know, you don't understand the unintended consequences of your actions, you know, and what you say.
Do you find an age factor in it?
An age factor? Well, you know, it depends, but that's a good question. I don't want to say that, you know, racism is, you know, all ages, that way. Yeah. So you can't.
But do you find your own peers are less past remarkable?
I think there would be class as well.
Okay, that's fair enough.
I think generally those that are much more privileged would still want, like, where are you from, really? And, you know, that kind of thing. But for working class, like, backgrounds, they get on with it. They don't question you.
It's funny you say that. It's not all that long ago that a Saturday morning show on RTE, it was, I won't even say it, but it was said that, that racism is mainly from the working class. And I've always argued, no, it's not.
No,
the,
it's not.
The working class just get, you, we, the working class never have a choice where they live and who lives with them.
Mm-hmm.
It's a melting pot. Everybody moves in, everybody gets on, and particularly when there's kids involved.
I think people try to, in terms of the working class and so on, and them saying this, I think people were trying to create divisions within the working class. So like you've got social injustices happening, people, you know, struggling regards, you know, housing and so on. And I don't get this concept of where people are getting it from. Who in this country gets a free house? Who
there's
in
no
this
such
country?
A thing
there's
as
no
a free
such
house.
Thing. Absolutely.
Actually, Tony's really good on the numbers and Tony has crunched all the numbers. And it would actually be cheaper to give people a free house than what
go.
They're doing at the moment.
Yeah,
it would be cheaper for everybody in the long run.
There are 434 children currently in emergency accommodation of over 2 years. For each of those kids represents a household. Each of those households represents 69,000 per annum, if not 119,000, depending on the type of accommodation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You could build a house for the price of
it would actually be cheaper.
Imagine saying
the taxpayer, oh, we can't give them free houses. Well, actually, if you give them free houses, you're going to be like 2% better off in the tax. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but
it's you bring it to
it's
a great
that
point.
Creating
yeah.
a rhetoric within a say class of people that are struggling, you know, and are lacking the resources, and it's trying to create that division within them. And I think that's unfair. And that's what we need to be, you know, we need to be very much cognizant about.
I think it's a really good point. And I think it's something that we saw in history past that's where the alt-right goes. And I don't like using fash for cash
yeah.
or fascists, whatever you want to call them. That's where they go. They look where people are hurting most.
Mm-hmm.
And then insert, I mean, at the farmers' protest last week, they were at the farmers' protest.
Yeah.
You mm-hmm. know, they're inserting themselves into issues that really do matter to people.
Yeah.
And they're shaping a narrative that simply is not true. Mm-hmm. If there were only two people homeless in this country, Fine Gael would make sure one of them was on a housing list or in a hub.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the numbers.
Yeah.
It's the ideology.
Yeah.
Well, I suppose what I'm hearing, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that the narrative is othering.
Yeah, it is absolutely othering. It's absolutely, and it's doing it to people who are vulnerable.
Mm.
The working class are vulnerable. They don't have the resources and so on. And then you're creating othering between them, you know, and it's dividing them. And like even Rona Murphy's comments, you know, regards children, you know what I mean? Yet again, like she is, you know, she's a privileged woman, end of, you know, regardless of her background and her lived experiences many years ago, she ruined it because she could not empathize with the homeless, with those that are running away from ISIS and then saying that they, you know, are indoctrinated by ISIS. You know, she ruined that kind of like, she's creating this rhetoric and trying to divide people, you know, and it's.
And it's terrifying because she did that. She made outrageous claims that were factually had no basis.
Mm-hmm.
It's important that we say that there was no basis for, like, there's no.
It's complete misinformation
yeah.
and the spreading of disinformation.
But
like,
if you were that child at, as you were on 9/11,
if
you were that child on the morning that Leo Varadkar was standing in Wexford
mm-hmm.
canvassing with her and you're in school as a young child of a mixed race or a young Muslim or.
Yeah.
How do you feel in Ireland?
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel?
Yeah, well, that's exactly it. And like I was saying earlier on, I spent time in Lebanon in January and I met these children that came from Syria.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to be, you know, using children for your little rhetoric ploy, it's just nasty. It's wrong. And you don't do that. It's just, it's very, very heartless, in my opinion.
It is.
You know, it's cold.
It's very cold.
And it shouldn't be in politics. And, you know, we need to start calling out politicians and we need to start calling out political party leaders that are not ready to address this issue.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? And regardless of their own backgrounds.
Yeah. I'm going to move to it, to the political realm as well, because When Noel Grealish made his comments, the Minister for Finance wrote to him, said, you know, factually everything you said was incorrect. And he wrote what I'd call a severe reprimand in political speak. But in the same day, he also then intervened in a health centre that was going to be treating people with addiction issues in my community. I'm going to tell you the truth. Mm-hmm. And I was furious because these people, you know, it was a real case of NIMBYism.
Yeah.
And again, that there should be no room for this sort of stuff in politics where we're having this great, this narrative coming in. And again, Fine Gael yesterday were happy enough to take Noel's votes. Fine Gael were happy enough to throw Darren Scully out of the party for a few months and bring him back into the party after he made his comments about the poor child on the beach in Turkey.
Yeah.
And say that he didn't want to represent African.
That's so true. That's so true, Tony. You know, as I said, there's room in the political parties that we have for these views. And that's the problem.
They must think they're a vote getter, though, because that's why a lot of them.
When you appeal to the lowest common denominator, it's always a vote getter with some people. It is always a vote getter.
Mm-hmm.
They're also trying to encompass the ones who don't feel that way. And it's do will enough of those be alienated by what they say? That's kind of the problem.
Well, for the first time you're ever going to hear me reference Fintan O'Toole on this podcast. but Fintan O'Toole does have one interesting thing that he says about Trump's policy of what he calls creeping fascism,
mm-hmm.
where you say something outrageous and then you withdraw then you
walk back from
and
it.
But the next time you say something that is outrageous, it doesn't sound as outrageous
That's
anymore.
Right. That's right.
And that is creeping into Ireland.
No, and I see it. And the by-elections showed it. The comments did, you know, and the lack of action from leadership really just kind of just emphasized it even more. And I think Joe O'Brien, who's now a TD, he made a fantastic point when he said that it is time now that leaders lead on these issues, even if, you know, it doesn't appeal to certain people. We need to lead. And that's what true leadership is about. And going back to that young girl when, you know, that 9/11 happened, what I want from the future is I want to start seeing, you know, political party leaders actually leading on this issue and not being afraid to talk about it. Some politicians don't want to talk about it or address it because they're like, oh, it might, you know, add fuel to the fire. And it's like, no, you need to talk about it. You need to call it out.
I had this conversation with somebody before the local elections. Somebody was standing in the local elections and I said, how do you handle if you get racism on the doorstep?
Mm-hmm.
And this person said, I walk away, not interested in that vote.
Yeah.
But there are many, many, many politicians who will not walk away from that vote.
Yeah, yeah.
There are many who will not.
I spoke to someone who was canvassing with one of the MEPs now. And he was impressed by him because he handed a leaflet at the door and the person went on a racist rant.
Mm.
And the candidate literally took the leaflet out and said, I do not want your racist vote. Thank you very much. Yeah. And left. Now he's an MEP.
Oh, well, and I know another candidate who actually stood and had the, tell me why you believe that. And let's do the whole, and then did the mechanics of it and then kind of undermined the argument. However, that winning that, one doorstep at a time, door, when we need to have it out of mainstream, we need to make sure that we're calling out. Let's, you know, like deplatforming actually shouldn't be a controversial topic.
Mm-hmm.
You should not be entitled to an opinion just because you want one.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to bring us on to this. We have a lot of calls for the national discussion.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
And the national discussion that people are calling for is a discussion about immigrants in Ireland.
Yeah. No, hang on. It's framed as, well, how many refugees do you think we should take?
Now, we do need a national discussion, but it's not that national discussion we need. The national discussion we need is, why do you feel the way you feel
about immigrants? Yeah, it's addressing our biases.
That, yeah. yeah, That's the one. That's the introspective one. That's where you're looking at yourself.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that?
Well, that's exactly what we should be doing. You know, we should be addressing our biasness. We should be, you know, looking at, you know, why I feel this way. Why do I feel that sense of feeling uncomfortable when you see a video? Why do you feel uncomfortable? And teasing that out, you know, that way. There's, you know, I read a book recently. It's something along the lines of the title. Oh, it slipped my mind. But why I stopped speaking to white people about race, you know, and it's just interesting because it's regards, you know, goes back to their own identity because they themselves are not feeling like they have an identity. So it's, you know, easy to then call out those that feel they have an identity, like, you know, people of color and so on. So it's an education. And I don't think we've never gotten that education. People in Ireland haven't been educated in terms of, you know, integration. People see integration as assimilation. You behave the way Irish people behave. You go for a drink in the pub with your pint of Guinness, you know? That's not, you know, integration. And it's a two-way street as well. Like, it's a two-way direction kind of thing. You know, you also have to learn, like, about other cultures and how do we, you know, be happy as part of an Irish society and integrate our differences and our similarities together. And you see it in school. You see how, you know, certain groups of people will stick with their friends, you know, and they'll stick with those friends and they can't, you know, integrate with other friends. I think one thing that I'm really grateful for having this two lens that I can look through and two worlds, being part of two worlds, is that I have friends from all over the world. And I'm so comfortable in having friends all around the world and like their different cultures and being part of their cultures and not having to, you know, find it strange why they behave a certain way. I want to understand them more because then that actually teaches me that, okay, they're behaving this way because that's how they are, you know, that way. And it's just that kind of acceptance and tolerance rather than do what I do attitude.
How do you find the online experience?
The online experience.
Yeah. I'm just wondering, is there a big gulf between real life and online life?
For myself?
Yeah. Between the way, the attitudes.
Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely. I had this discussion with my uncle. My uncle Brendan, his wife is Mexican and his kids are, you know, mixed as well. And I said, when people meet me for the first time, they may act normal and, you know, talk with me and so on. But if they see my surname or hear about my surname, then I get a completely different attitude and a different face. And then all of a sudden, oh, you're North African. And I'm like, where's the Irishness gone? Like, why did that just disappear? You know, or, you know, you're Libyan and that's it, you know. But online, I think when people go to my profile, I'm like born to Orion and born to a Sed. So yeah. People are like, oh, okay. You know, but also I do feel there's this difference as well, from my experiences with friends that I have. So if you tick the exotic box in terms of how you look, people also treat you differently. So it's, you know, I remember my husband doing the analytics on my Twitter.
Yeah.
And his face dropped. It was very funny. He was like, whoa, look at the amount of people that visit you, you know, your Twitter handle, because he's in marketing. And then he did the gender and it was more men than women. And he kind of, his face dropped and he was like, oh, okay. You know, it was just like, you know, and I do get comments about my appearance and my smile, but also linked to being exotic.
Yeah.
And you're not really Irish. And oh, how can you be Irish? And it's like, oh, good Lord.
But isn't everything pretty much exotic to the Irish? Pasta is exotic to the Irish, you know
exactly,
what I mean?
Exactly, yeah, exactly.
An orange, so exotic.
Where's it from?
We had mandarins. We were really posh.
Sad sales.
But, no, I suppose that it is an interesting thing because we do need, as you said, to have, we shouldn't be afraid to have this national conversation because if you have it and you have it in good faith, as opposed to, yeah, I think there are bad faith players. Mm-hmm. And I think there's bad faith players politically, and I think there's bad faith, yeah, players.
There'll always be bad faith players.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think if we have it in good faith, the arguments that people make, they don't stack up, whether it's an economic argument or it's, mm-hmm, a societal argument or adding, because they keep saying, oh, we lose our culture. Yeah. But culture,
look, there's
evolves.
A different culture in Ballymun to there is in Ashburn, exactly, to there is in Galway.
To there is, you know, in Ponskeen.
I always find it when I go down the West Coast, this country, I mean, Dublin is entirely different to the rest of this country. Mm. And it is, yeah, culturally different.
Because no one wants to be.
You know, if you were to give me a choice and where I could live, I could choose Clare or Dublin. I choose Clare. Mm-hmm. It's a nicer culture. Mm-hmm. It is a nicer culture.
Funnily enough, my mum was just saying about the countryside. She'd said it's more family orientated, and, you know. And it's,
then, you know, they just
we're all being pushed out of Dublin. That's the problem. Yeah.
You know, they just care
can't
more.
Afford it.
There's more community. They, yeah, just care more.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm thinking of putting a hotel in this room shortly. do you think? Are you optimistic about us doing as a country, as a body of politics? Are you optimistic that there is the will there to actually challenge this? Because it is growing. There's no, yeah, doubt it's growing.
Yeah. Yeah. Am I optimistic? Yes, yeah, of course. I'm an optimistic person. We need to do it now, and it can't be a box ticking exercise. It cannot be that. Mm-hmm. And we need to be very, very cautious of it turning into that. You know, look what we've done with the marriage equality, repeal, you know, so we can do this, right? I think our generation are wanting something different, because our generation are mixed. We'll have, you know, heritage from from Africa, from wherever, from Brazil, but born and raised in Ireland. So, you know, it's a new generation, and we need to accept that, and we need to make it safe for them, and we need to make it harmonious. And I think it's really, really important. It cannot be a box ticking exercise. I'm just afraid of that.
And it has to be representative then.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, exactly. It has to be representative. And you know what? Actually, just on that point, you see a lot of, especially in corporations and, you know, different organizations, and they'll talk about, oh, you know, diversity and inclusion and whatever. And it'll be a white dude telling you about diversity and inclusion. And you'll have, you know, someone sitting there who's mixed and is kind of saying, well, I think I'm the best person to say, right, you know, hear my voice, because I'll tell you about diversity and inclusion, you know, and take my experiences, you know, rather than your own, because you don't know. You've never been the victim of, you know, racial abuse or, you know, xenophobia.
You mean to tell me that a panel of right-wing talkers shouldn't be the people that we have?
Well, you remind me of one of our very quiet guests we had on, a very unassuming person called Shubangi. And Shubangi said, pull up a chair.
Yeah.
Pull up the chair. And don't talk about, talk to. And I mean, that we see that quite a lot. I mean, it's very hard to see a panel where people are included in it. And it's very hard to see that there will be a talk about racism. And this really gets me, where those who are subject to it will be included and
excluded.
Well, just this week, another commentator, we'll go back to that. Another commentator said something like, walked out of my house, you know, birds singing, man walking dog, you know, everything's great. And it was kind of a little dig at what social media says about how life is. And I thought, yeah, it's great for you because it's not you. Mm-hmm. It's not you. If you were Shubangi walking out there, another friend of mine who's had this experience, and somebody's going to cycle by and go, Parky.
Yeah.
You know, it's not going to happen to you because you're a nice middle-class white man.
Dean Van Noyen had a great reply to that. He said, we get it. You're white.
But just because you don't experience it personally, you can't discount it.
But also they get offended that if you say, actually, you shouldn't be, you know, and they're like, well, what do you mean? And, oh, you know, because I'm like, you know, oh, why, you know, this is political correctness and so on. And it's like, no, because you don't experience it. And, you know, be grateful that you don't actually experience it. And why don't you, you know, help and be, you know, maybe be quiet.
Well, you know, that remember way what it was like as being Irish in the 80s in the UK. You know, if you want to know what it's like, that's what it's like.
Yeah, exactly. And and for those that don't know what it was like for being Irish in the 80s, you know, just start to listen. It's okay to actually be quiet and listen. And I think just people find it difficult to just listen.
Well, I have to say, thank you so much for coming on and having a chat with us. That's been really informative. You've a lot ahead of you. Oh, you got your master's just
yesterday.
Yeah. Woohoo! That's a huge thing. It's a huge thing. No, really, really congratulations. Yeah.
Thank you. Big thing.
And you're heading off to warmer climes, hopefully.
You're right. if Trump lets me in.
We won't release this until you're in the air.
Good God.
it was a great pleasure. And you're right. I suppose the overriding message we have to take away is that we have to listen. We have to. We do absolutely have to listen. There's no two ways about it. Two crappy old man here, Martin.
Well, I'm white, Tony. You're kind of red.
Oh, so. Man. Tony the tomato head.
Oh, God, that's brutal.
It's the Irish complexion, though. Yeah, exactly. You look exotic, Tony.
You look like a tomato.
That's the first time I've ever... Thank you, Martin. Thanks for listening, folks. Please show us a bit of support on the Patreon. We do have a very limited number of the Session of On t-shirts left. We've raised, I think, over €700 for the Kurdish Red Cross. Yeah. Huge thank you to everybody who's bought them. We are so happy that that's gone so well. But head over to tortoiseshack.ie. You will see our merchandise there. It's very grateful. And thanks to Kira for letting us use the artwork. Talk to you all soon. Take care.
Bye.